Welcome to New World Notes. I am Kenneth Doust. Today, another gorgeous audio collage by the talented Virtual Renderings, also known as Chaz K. It's the first of a three-part series known as The Peaceful Atom. This one's about the atomic power industry from 1950 through the meltdown at Three Mile Island in 1979. A couple of quick glosses. The initials AEC stand for Atomic Energy Commission, and NRC, of course, for Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's the same corrupt government, quote, regulatory, unquote, agency. I'm forced to snip out a minute or two of this piece, so I'll shut up now before it's three. Here is Virtual Renderings, The Peaceful Atom, Early Days.
Well, I'm not uptight, not unattractive. Turn me on tonight, 'cause I'm radioactive, radioactive. Well, it's not a fight, and I'm not your captive. Turn me loose tonight.
A nuclear generating plant is as harmless as it's as harmless as a chocolate factory.
When did all this begin, Dad?
Well, son, it's a very old story. It's so old, it's hard to say when it really began. Could have been back in 1540 when Copernicus identified the Earth as a speck of dust moving in an orbit around the sun. Or it could have been in 1905 when a young German physicist arrived at a fundamental truth, that matter could be converted into energy and expressed it in the equation E equals MC squared. Then there were other dates. 1937, the first industrial atom smasher. 1942, the first nuclear chain reaction. 1945, the bomb. Somewhere in the course of these events, the dawn came up on the atomic era. It's going to have a tremendous effect on our town down there, son. It'll be felt in every town in America. And it won't matter if they make ships or shoes or ceiling wax. Atomic power have become benefits to mankind that we can as yet only imagine.
Truly, the superpower which man has released from within the atom's heart is not one, but many giants. One is the warrior, the destroyer. Another is the engineer, seeking to provide vast quantities of energy to run the world's
machines. Don't drink tap water. It may be contaminated.
Another is the farmer, helping to better feed tomorrow's world. Still another is the healer, helping to diagnose and cure the sick.
The extensive section on health effects offers a whole new view of the consequences of radiation-induced disease. Yes, there are cancers to specific organs. Many thyroid cancers caused by iodine-131 and 129. But there are also diseases that affect body systems, such as the whole endocrine system, not just the thyroid, or the immune system, the respiratory and the reproductive systems. Diseases that do not necessarily kill, but fundamentally change a body, even into future generations.
And the last is the research worker, working on in the fields of pure science to reveal more of the mysteries of the universe. But all are within man's power, subject to his command.
Nobody has a clue how much it's going to cost us.
On his firmness in the use of that power depends now the future of his children and his children's children in the new world of the atomic age. Now, most atoms of most elements are content with their lot in life. We speak of them as being stable, but others are busy day and night, being what science calls radioactive. Like radium, throwing off powerful rays along with some of its neutrons and protons, until it actually alters its own nuclear structure and changes to another family, and then to another, until it does become stable at last. As U-235 begins to fission, the graphite slows down the free neutrons, and some of them hit other U-235 atoms, keeping the chain reaction going. But others of those slowed down neutrons hit U-238 atoms. And here's what happens. Remember, we said that U-238 wouldn't support a chain reaction. However, it will capture neutrons from U-235 fission and start a process which converts the U-238 first to neptunium, then to plutonium. And plutonium will fission in chain reaction. Thus, the reactor itself is a source of atomic fuel. Besides producing plutonium, the nuclear reactor makes possible two very important peacetime uses of atomic energy. Remember that the chain reaction process in the reactor creates tremendous heat, which scientists have learned how to control. Thus, a reactor may be substituted in many industrial applications where heat is now provided by coal or petroleum. But such uses in the foreseeable future are limited. For one thing, a reactor pile must be shielded to protect the workers around it from dangerous radiation, and this shielding adds tremendous weight. However, an atomic energy power plant has already proved feasible. The future supplying of electric power to entire cities is far from impossible.
When human beings succeeded in splitting atoms, they also embarked upon a process that would inevitably increase the levels and diversity of background radiation on the Earth. The process of fissioning uranium in nuclear reactors creates more than 200 new man-made radioactive elements. Some live for only seconds. Some remain radioactive for millions of years. Once created, these diabolical elements will inevitably find their way into the environment and will eventually enter the reproductive organs of plants, animals, and humans, where they will mutate the genes in reproductive cells to cause disease and death in the immediate generation, or pass a hidden genetic disease to distant offspring down the time track.
In 1964, a team of scientists working for the Atomic Energy Commission studied the possible consequences of a nuclear accident. They concluded, "We have found in our present study nothing inherent in reactors or in safeguard systems as they now have been developed, which guarantees either that major reactor accidents will not occur or that protective safeguard systems will not fail. Should such accidents occur, very large damages could result."
And that's when the nuclear dream began to fall apart.
In 1965, scientists advising the Atomic Energy Commission tried to force the manufacturers to make their reactors safer.
Good evening. Well, as I'm sure you've heard, we're going to have an atomic power plant here in New York. The Atomic Energy Commission has granted to Consolidated Edison permission to build a nuclear steam electric generating station at Indian Point in Westchester County.
Westinghouse had already built a small atomic plant at Indian Point. Now they applied to the AEC for a license to build a giant reactor on the same site. At the same time, General Electric proposed a massive plant just outside Chicago. The scientists on the Advisory Committee on Reactor Safeguards were worried that a core melt so close to large cities could cause a disaster. They drafted a letter to the chairman of the AEC, Glenn Seaborg, which would by law have to be published. It said they would only agree to the plants if the manufacturers redesigned all future reactors to stop a molten core escaping if an accident, however unlikely, occurred. Seaborg was an ardent proponent of large reactors.
"We think that it will be possible to build huge nuclear power reactors that will produce electricity at the rate of millions of kilowatts and desalt seawater at the rate of hundreds of millions of gallons a day."
Seaborg asked for the letter not to be published. The impact on the industry might be serious, he said, and the public might misunderstand it. He and his fellow commissioners would deal with the problem in private.
"All I can say is that we tried to take such steps as we could to follow their advice, to make the changes that would make them safe.
So what did you say to the manufacturers?
We had meetings with the manufacturers and discussed the issue with them. I think they were doing the best they could, and I don't know that we ever made a tremendous push to try to get them to change their whole manufacturing system.
Why not?
Oh, I think it was at that time not regarded as a feasible approach.
We asked General Electric to come in and discuss how they might cope with this, and in effect, they came in and showed the problems that would arise with their containment and indicated they didn't think they wanted to continue selling power reactors if they were going to have to deal with the core melt problem. Westinghouse showed something called a core catcher, but no proof of how it would work. Neither company was anxious to deal with the problem, obviously.
Weren't General Electric, in effect, threatening you? They're saying, if you insist on this, then we'll just pull out of this.
It was a kind of threat, I think, yes.
What would have happened if you had said, I think these plants that are being built, these enormous plants by General Electric and Westinghouse, are potentially dangerous? What would have happened if you'd said that?
Well, that's a hypothetical question.
You had the power to do it. What would have happened?
I don't think we had the power to stop them. Well, we could have refused to license them, of course, but again, I think that in the context of the times, it's not a question that makes much sense.
Señor, señor, can you tell me where we're heading? Lincoln County Road or Armageddon? Seems like I've been down this way before.
The most deadly isotope, and one that gets produced in nuclear reactors in large quantities, and also is the perfect material for nuclear weapons, is plutonium-239. Plutonium-239 will be around for 2 million years. UN agencies and writers who say that we all have lived with radiation from sun and soil since time immemorial, do not take into account that we, as a part of creation, had 1 to 2 million years to evolve under that radiation. And most of the 200-plus radioactive isotopes from nuclear power, including plutonium, are entirely new isotopes, results of the man-made splitting of atoms. Our collective bodies have only known them since August 1945.
A number of people in the mid-70s left the NRC because they felt that safety concerns just weren't being taken seriously. The mindset, to be somewhat simplistic about it, was that everything was safe enough already, that anyone who wanted to raise a new concern, anyone who was skeptical that a particular plant should be licensed, had an immensely heavy burden to demonstrate that it was worth really perturbing the process. Because nothing serious had happened yet, or at least nothing serious enough had happened yet.
Rise several hundred feet in the air. You could see it from the lights around the plant, a white steam, and it roared.
An accident in the water cooling system at the Three Mile Island nuclear power plant in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, forced the company to call a general emergency and shut down part of the plant for an unspecified period.
It roared with a tremendous roar of releasing steam. It woke me up. And I looked out the window and I saw this huge column going up in the air and roaring.
What is your principal concern right at this minute?
Well, my
principal concern is that we got an accident that we've never been designed to accommodate.
On March the 28th, 1979, a series of human and mechanical errors at the Three Mile Island plant exposed the core. It reacted with steam and produced hydrogen, which exploded. None of the emergency teams could understand what was going on inside the reactor. Then suddenly, this helicopter detected a large radioactive cloud drifting towards the nearest town. The voices of the commissioners in charge of the disaster were recorded by a dictaphone that had been left running on a table.
What was the time field involved there?
Hours.
Hours before what?
Before you had a core melt.
Before you had a core melt?
You would have hours till when you were generating fission products in a core melt kind of situation through the containment.
I think, we got the best we got, you know. And they're not coming up with answers. We got the...
Well, don't you think as a precautionary measure there should be some evacuation?
Probably, but I must say it's operating totally in the blind, and I don't have any confidence at all that if we order evacuation, we won't move people from a place where they've already gotten a piece of the dose. They're going to get into an area where they will get another piece. You know, they will have had 0.5 of what they were going to get, and now they'll move someplace else and get 1.0. Now, Joe?
Yes, sir.
It seems to me I've got to call the governor.
Yes, sir, I do. I think you've got to talk to him immediately.
Do it immediately. We're operating almost totally in the blind. His information is ambiguous. Mine is non-existent. I don't know, a couple of blind men now have to stagger on making decisions here.
Don't we know that it's been stopped?
We just lost all communication with the control room.
For 4 days, the engineers at the plant watched helplessly as a bubble of hydrogen grew inside the damaged reactor. What they feared most was a further massive explosion. But they knew that if they tried to force the bubble out of the reactor, it might move downwards and completely uncover the core. They would then face the nightmare of a meltdown. The engineers were trapped by the consequences of an accident no one could have anticipated. It was a point they made to the commissioners again and again during the incident.
It's a failure mode that's never been studied. It's unbelievable.
Well, the thing that impressed me was how little we really knew about the situation. It was very hard to figure out what was happening. There was a lot of confusion on everyone's part, both on the company's part and the government's part, and a lot of other people who were participating. And I think this had a very strong effect on the public. Basically, to see all the men in the white suits or white lab coats who were supposed to know on TV basically scratching their heads. Made a lot of people wonder whether things were as much under control as they had been told.
What about the radiation effects from all this failure?
We've all seen the poor guy suffering the effects of sunburn. Well, radiation's like that.
Your water has been pasteurized. Your pets are in control. The children in the nursery are looking very old. Cows are giving birth to donkeys, and those donkeys will soon fly. There's a member of your family that you can't identify. It's all about genetics.
It bombards the living tissue, it damages the cell membrane, it produces mutant viruses, and it changes the genetic code itself. And it changes the genetic code itself. And it changes the genetic code itself.
Within the NRC, no one really thought that you could have a core meltdown. I mean, it was just... It was more maybe the Titanic sort of mentality. This plant was so well designed that you couldn't possibly have a serious core damage.
You dance as you dissolve. You have nightmares when you're walking. Your sweet dreams are in a heap. You say nothing when you're talking. You see devils when you sleep. You see devils in your cornflakes. You see angels in your hell. You see sugar in your headache. You see petrol in your well. Your flowers have gone nuclear. There's coffee in the rain. And you cannot tell the difference between pleasure and pain. It's all about genetics. It's all about genetics.
Everything is under control. There is and was no danger to public health and safety. There was a small release of radiation to the environment. All safety equipment functioned properly. Metropolitan Edison has been monitoring the air in the vicinity of the plant constantly since the incident. No increase in normal radiation levels has been detected.
It is my feeling that the people within the radius of a few miles, especially pregnant women, should be told that there is a significantly increased risk to their babies, and that women who are carrying babies should be evacuated from within a few mile radius around that plant.
Nothing is riskless, but when one weighs the risks overall, the advantages of nuclear power exceed the risks.
The situation is more complex than the company first led us to believe. We are taking more tests, and at this point we believe there is still no danger to the public health. Metropolitan Edison has given you and us conflicting information.
The new information is this. The accident sent ionized radiation beaming through the plant's four-foot-thick walls. Consequently, the metal shield that protects the nuclear fuel may have been damaged.
There is continuing gamma radiation coming out, but the readings that I obtained in the on the way here from the airport indicate that it is not just direct radiation from the reactor, which in fact goes down briefly when you go behind a mountain, but it is in fact to a large extent not decreasing the distance to a very rapid degree, the way you would expect from an inverse square law. So what we're dealing with is fallout, plain old bomb kind of fallout.
And the source of leakage radiation is coming from our auxiliary building and some water that's accumulated on the floor. We're presently pumping that up. That'll be contained in tanks.
You feel you must debate it, but you cannot stop progress. You feel you must debate it, but you cannot stop progress. You feel you must debate it, but you cannot stop progress. You feel you must debate it, but you cannot stop progress.
What about genetics?
It's all about genetics.
All about
the valve that failed at Three Mile Island had malfunctioned 11 times before at other nuclear plants. But neither the designer of the reactor nor the NRC had taken corrective measures or issued a warning.
Now, that warning, if it had gone out to all the rest of the similar nuclear power plants, the accident at Three Mile Island would never have happened, and that plant would have remained an anonymous sandbar in the middle of the Susquehanna.
At 4 a.m. on March 28, 1979, a series of mechanical failures and human mistakes led to a meltdown of the nuclear core at a reactor at Three Mile Island, just 10 miles south of Harrisburg. Radiation was released into the atmosphere at levels too high for the plant's meters to read, and more than 200,000 people voluntarily left the region. No deaths immediately resulted, and federal regulators say the amount of radiation was too small to cause serious health damage. But independent researchers later found that lung cancer and leukemia rates in communities downwind of the plant were 2 to 10 times higher than those upwind.
There was a perception that the Nuclear Regulatory Commission was in bed with plant operators, not just this plant, but all plant operators. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission wasn't a regulatory commission. It was a promotional. It should have been called the Nuclear Promotional Agency.
One of the main things we began to discover is that our theoretical calculations did not have a strong correlation with reality. While the regulations required emergency core cooling systems, pumps and valves, we didn't really have any basis for knowing that those pumps and valves would actually prevent a meltdown of the reactor. Because the degree of complexity of trying to predict what will happen inside a huge reactor in the midst of a pipe break, we couldn't make any judgments because we didn't have any facts on which to make judgments.
During the winter of 1971, a series of tests of emergency core cooling systems were performed at the AEC's private testing site in Idaho. accidents were simulated in a small model of a reactor. In each case, the emergency systems worked, but the water failed to fill the core. Often it was forced out under pressure. Despite this, both the industry and senior members of the AEC argued that the full-size safety systems were safe enough.
I think what happened was the federal government and the nuclear industry decided that the absence of proof of danger was almost as good as proof of safety. In other words, even though we had done experiments that cast doubt on whether the safety systems would actually work if we had an accident, we still had that backup that, well, maybe an accident won't happen while we continue to work to perfect the design of the emergency system. Now, we couldn't announce to the public that we, having told the public that the plants were safe, we now had to disclose to them we were wrong, and then the fact that all these safety systems we told you about, actually, they might not do any good. My goodness, the uproar would have been, we all probably would have been fired. That would have been the end of this wonderful technology from the standpoint of us. And we just couldn't admit that we had been wrong. And plus, of course, you understand with this one experiment, it didn't prove that the emergency systems wouldn't work in all circumstances. Nope. We couldn't announce to the public that we, having told the public that the plants were safe, we now had to disclose to them we were wrong, and then the fact that all these safety systems we told you about, actually, they might not do any good. My goodness, the uproar would have been, we all probably would have been fired.
That would have been the end of this wonderful technology
from the standpoint of us.
And we used to talk about inviting people in off the street to see if they didn't want to come work for the NRC, because we really had more work than we could handle. And we'd review a power plant maybe with 10 to 12 man years of effort. And you got to remember, it takes thousands of man years of effort to design a power plant. So we were putting in an extremely small audit.
They scaled this thing up from the 100 megawatt demonstration plants, the sort of laboratory proof of concept nuclear power plants, to these 1,000 megawatt super plants like Zion and Dresden and 3 Mile Island, without anything in between. These monster plants were something that they did not understand clearly.
They're gonna build them even though we say no. They are the rulers, they say which way to go. We are the people. They are nuclear madness. Blow us apart. We are the people. They are nuclear man.
We heard Virtual Renderings, Peaceful Atom, Early Days. Thanks for listening. NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com. You'll find a link to all of Virtual Renderings' audio collages there. Once again, NewWorldNotes.blogspot.com. It'll get to my non-carborundum and... hope to see you again next week. Ciao.